big, complicated democracy like ours, if we can't compromise, by definition, we can't govern ourselves.
Flint Mayor Karen Weaver told lawmakers the people in her city are angry and afraid and have lost all trust in government officials.
We are a people who have had our democratic rights taken away from us by emergency manager law.
I talked with Bill, the FBI guy, and we've agreed to meet with you and Reverend Graham in the morning, probably 8 o'clock, and we're going to turn ourselves in.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10 and it is Thursday, February 11th, 2016. We have a good show for you today. We know you're a lot of dog lovers and cat lovers in our audience today. We're going to be focusing on the business of pets with Dr. Julia Georgeson from Blum Animal Hospital. That's coming up in our first segment this morning. But first, your national, international, global intel. It has been another rough night for stocks. Asian stock markets down again overnight. A global sell-off is underway. Hong Kong was the worst. South Korea next. Hong Kong off nearly 6% overnight. Investors are concerned about a slowing global economic growth and the collapse in oil prices. Yesterday, the U.S. markets closed mostly lower. The Dow dropped 100 points. The S&P was down a fraction of a point. The NASDAQ added about 15 points. Yesterday, Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen kicked off 2 days of congressional testimony. She offered no major surprises. She reiterated the Fed's confidence that the U.S. economy is on track for stronger growth this year. But she didn't let on to what the plans might be for the rest of the year.
Since my appearance before this committee last July, the economy has made further progress toward the Federal Reserve's objective of maximum employment. And while inflation is expected to remain low in the near term, in part because of further declines in energy prices, the Federal Open Market Committee expects that inflation will rise to its 2% objective over the medium term.
At the same time, Yellen did caution that she is watching for global weakness and falling financial markets could depress U.S. economic gains. She says that the Fed's pace and ideas for this year are not set in stone. Pretty much her words. The Labor Department today will report on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits. Freddie Mac will release U.S. mortgage rates this week. Yesterday, shares of Twitter nosedived almost 12% in after-hours trading. This is the company rolled out its new timeline and changes to its service. Twitter has been having all kinds of problems. The CEO of Twitter did speak to investors last night trying to reassure them, and we'll tell you some of what he said a little bit later on this morning. Also today, there is news here in Chicago that canine flu may be back. One of the city's largest animal hospitals, Blum Animal Hospital, has issued a notice to its clients this week saying the status of canine flu is still here. There are some cases, H3N2 influenza, which is the virus that happened around the country last year, started here in Chicago, caused a national outbreak. It is now in numerous states, and that's going to bring us to our first guest this morning, Dr. Julia Georgeson, who is the co-director of Blum Animal Hospital in Chicago. And if you don't know Blum, Blum is always ranked by Chicago Reader as one of the best in the city. Good morning, Dr. Georgeson.
Good morning.
And for just so our audience knows, you're my veterinarian as well.
Yes,
not mine,
I am.
My dogs.
Right, yeah, your dogs, yeah.
And but still, this is very scary. Canine flu is back. What are you seeing?
It just never left. There was an outbreak in March, as the media reported, large outbreak, and that was when we saw just hundreds of animals across the city, dogs, get very, very sick. And that lasted for about an 8 to 12-week period. And then in November, between Thanksgiving and Christmas, we saw it surge up again. We think that's because a lot of animals were boarded over the Thanksgiving holiday, and then we saw that. It's just now, instead of being an epidemic, it's endemic, meaning that it's going to stay in this area. And we just wanted our clients to be educated for at-risk dogs. We're not seeing an outbreak like we did in the spring. It's just we will diagnose a case or two, a week. And we just wanted people to know there's a vaccine there and to be able to educate our clients about what is best for their pet.
We'll talk about that vaccine coming up after our break, but how many states is this in now? It's because Cornell
it's
University.
Spread, yeah. Oh, sorry.
You know, I was just going to say they're mapping it, right?
Yeah, it's spread. Yeah, Cornell University has a great mapping site. So does Merck, who is one of the makers of the vaccine and did a lot of the research whenever there was a, whenever this all started back in March. Those two places were key in, and Chicago was key actually in veterinarian swabbing and collecting samples so this new strain could be identified new to the U.S.
It started here though, they think, right? And how
it came here from Korea. It was first identified in Korea and in China in 06, 07.
Did they ever figure out how it came here?
No, they think it was probably a dog coming into the U.S.
Yeah. And it is fatal in some cases, right?
It is. There's a low fatality rate. Unfortunately, that does happen. But it is a high morbidity rate, meaning that every animal that's going to be, most animals are naive. And whenever they are exposed to that virus, they're going to get it.
Because it's a brand new virus. They have no resistance whatsoever to it, right?
Exactly. And it's highly contagious.
And I just remember seeing a picture last year of some of the dogs that were being treated. They had sort of like the space helmet oxygen masks on. This is pretty rough for dogs when they get it.
It is. I mean, those would be the more extreme cases. Most of the time, what we would see is they would have a cough, runny nose, be very lethargic, and it would last a lot longer than what we were used to. We'd have clients calling saying, you know, my dog's still coughing and it's been 2 weeks.
We're going to talk more about canine flu. There's a vaccine. We'll ask Dr. Georgeson if you should get it for your pets. And we'll talk about, you know, how to make your next visit to the vet a little bit less stressful for your pets, for you, and for the vets. It's all coming up with the opening bell here on WGN. It's 5:15, though, and we want to get you updated on traffic. Here is Mary Vandeville.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Sharp drops in Hong Kong and South Korea led Asian stocks lower overnight. Most U.S. markets were down yesterday as well. The Dow dropped 100. The S&P 500 was off a fraction. The Nasdaq, however, added 15 points. Lawmakers got their briefing from Fed Chair Janet Yellen yesterday. She says the Federal Reserve is unlikely to reverse its plan to raise interest rates further this year. But volatile financial markets and uncertainty over Chinese economic growth have raised risks to the U.S. economy. Two Indiana plants that make products for the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning industry are shifting their manufacturing operations to Mexico in moves that will cost 2,100 U.S. workers their jobs. The Carrier Corporation workers would be laid off over 3 years starting in 2017. The historic Jack Daniel's distillery is planning a $140 million expansion to help meet global demand for its prized Tennessee whiskey. Part of the money is for a bigger visitor center. More than 250,000 people drop by the Tennessee distillery every year. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:21. Good morning. Welcome back. We're talking about the business of pets today, a conversation about your pets, your cats, your dogs. And before the break, we were talking with Dr. Julia Georgeson of Blum Animal Hospital, Dr. G. Blum on Twitter, and blumvet.com, about this. And there's a flu vaccine for this new strain. Should pet parents get this for their pets?
I think it all depends on what risk factors the dog has. Does your dog go to daycare? Do you board your dog? Do you groom your dog? Do you take your dog to the dog park or to the beach? Is your dog highly social? I think if it's yes to any of those questions, then I would definitely suggest doing the flu vaccine.
Is it an expensive double sort of procedure, or what's the process of it?
No, because dogs have not had this vaccine before, they do have to get an initial shot and then a booster in 2 to 3 weeks. And then it would be yearly after that, very similar to a human getting a flu vaccine.
And is it expensive?
No, it's about in line with all other vaccines that your veterinarian offers.
One person asked me recently about the conditional status because they were concerned the FDA, the USDA, mm-hmm. which oversees pets, gave it a conditional approval. What does that mean?
It just means that, you know, it's a newer vaccine, but it has actually, I think that you can find on different websites with different companies, they have vaccinated, you know, thousands of dogs and not had a problem. I can say on our own personal experience in our clinic, we have definitely vaccinated over 1,000 dogs, and we have not had one have a vaccine reaction to this vaccine.
Is that a rarity to see that?
I would say this vaccine seems to be very safe for pets.
What is the process for doing a vaccine? Because, you know, when humans get the flu, we've always heard that if there's a real serious outbreak, it could take 6 months or a year, or even longer, for doctors to come up with a flu vaccine. How did they do it so fast?
I feel like they came up with it. They took a lot of swabs and they were just working, you know, around the clock to come up with this vaccine. They took a lot of samples initially from the outbreak in March, and then the vaccine came out in November. So, I mean, it did take some time for them to be able to isolate it and produce this vaccine.
This is another case of better safe than sorry, right?
Exactly. And I think this really shows that a lot of different universities and companies work together to get this approved for pets quickly.
Well, Blum Animal Hospital in Chicago, you're celebrating 60 years this year, is it? Or 60,
no, 1952, so almost 65 years.
You've been around for a long time, and you have thousands of clients. You see a lot of folks. What are the trends in veterinary care? I mean, what do you see as the biggest obstacle to doing your job on a regular basis?
I think a lot of the trends have gone to making it more friendly and a more comforting environment for people to bring their pets in. There has been a big push over the last several years to become cat friendly, and your clinic can actually get approved to be cat friendly. That just means that we're trying to break down the barriers for people to bring their cats into the veterinarian, meaning having quiet areas for the cats, teaching people how to safely be able to bring your cat to the clinic, safe handling techniques, low stress. I think that's huge.
And in my case, whenever I bring Murrow in, he tries to jump over the counter to get treats. He's not really stressed out. He's happy, excited.
Right.
But there are dogs that come in that are stressful. And, you know, is there something that pet parents can do to prepare their pets to come in to see you?
Yes, you are very lucky because you have a Labrador who's very happy to come to the vet, and
right,
we love
right.
him.
Yeah.
But it is more stressful for other people. I mean, I've even had extreme cases of animals being really stressed where the pet parent will just come and be in our lobby and hang out for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, have some treats, and then go back home just to condition them to be getting used to coming to the veterinarian. And we try to do things as far as going slowly, giving treats, being comforting to the animal.
From a money standpoint, is it profitable to be a veterinarian these days, or and with the expenses that come with being a pet parent and going to the vet, insurance is a big thing now too, right?
Well, yeah, I would say it's, you know, it's a lot of hard work. I mean, you have to be very dedicated to want to be in that. And that doesn't come from just the veterinarians. I would say for all the staff, the veterinary technicians, our assistants, our customer service people. I mean, it's a stressful job because it's a very emotional job. Clients, they can't tell you what their pet is thinking. They know their pet's sick. They don't understand what's going on. So for us, communication is key to ensure people understand what's happening with their pet and for us to be able to educate our clients.
Is insurance something you'd recommend for pet parents?
I really would. I probably would not have been my answer 15 years ago, but today I think it's a smart idea to be able to prepare for the unexpected.
Especially if you have a Labrador Retriever who likes to eat a lot of crazy stuff.
Exactly.
It can save you a lot of money. Well, Dr. Julia Georgeson, Blum Animal Hospital, the co-director there, Dr. G. Blum, blumvet.com. I have to say that I have, and I'm not just saying this because you're my vet, I have a lot of respect for veterinarians because what people don't understand is you have to know all of the animals. Doctors just know one person, a human, right? You have to go through the whole process of cows and all that stuff, right?
It's hard because they can't communicate to us. So, you know, there's a lot of technology that's come out. There's a lot of things to help us do our job better. But really, it's listening to the client and really doing a thorough exam on the pet and really forming a relationship with the client so you get to know their pet and know what's normal for them. I mean, if Murrow came in and he was, you know, depressed and not jumping up on the counter or happy to see me, I would know something was wrong with him. And I think that's really important for people to be able to really try to form and feel comfortable with their veterinarian. I think it's best for the pet and I think it's best for the client.
Dr. Julia Georgeson, the business of pets on the opening bell. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
It's 5:27 coming up on the news. Fresh from New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton. There's been another debate. Vic will have that next.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. It's beautiful, well-built, functional, and it's expensive.
It's $1,500, which is kind of crazy for a smartwatch.
Swiss watchmaker Tag Heuer has begun shipping the luxury smartwatch it first unveiled last fall, promising to deliver important information at a glance.
The next direction, the gate number for your flight as you arrive at the airport, or 1,000 other things that could make your life more easy and more manageable.
Dana Wollman with the tech blog Engadget says while the Android-based watch does offer a touch screen, long battery life, and smooth performance, it's hardly groundbreaking.
Really, what you're paying for is this storied signature Tag Heuer design.
And it doesn't come cheap. The Tag Heuer Connected runs $1,500, about the same as the luxury version of the Apple Watch. The good news is, if you hate it, after 2 years, the company will let you swap it out for a good old analog timepiece. But
you still have to pay another $1,500 to get the mechanical watch.
With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37. The Chicago Auto Show Media Preview Day is today. The annual show gets underway at McCormick Place. The media will get a preview of some of the new cars starting at 7:30 this morning. Already, the media's got a look at the new Nissan Armada. They got a preview last night at an event. It's a giant SUV on display. It's one of the newest cars there. One of the other new cars on display is the Braun Ability MXV. It's a Ford Explorer conversion. And believe it or not, it's the world's first wheelchair-accessible SUV. That's right. Until now, there hasn't been anything but a van that is wheelchair accessible for people who want to drive and can drive themselves if they have a disability. Jesse Billauer is a surfer. He was injured, broke his neck during a surfing accident, and now in a wheelchair. And he's young, like most people who want to buy a new car these days, and he doesn't want to drive around in a van. And so he's here at the auto show in Chicago promoting this new Ford Explorer that's going to be actually built in Indiana. And Jesse is with us this morning on the phone. Jesse, what got you involved in this, and did you have any role in helping develop this?
I mean, after I got injured, you know, I wanted to be able to surf again. I wanted to do the things that I love. So I did, and I saw that other people wanted to do it. So, you know, that's when I started Life Rolls On. And then I was introduced to a company called Braun Ability, which was actually making this vehicle. It was the MXV, and they were working with Ford to make it happen on the Ford Explorer. You know, I wasn't really on the forefront of the design or making it, but I'm on the forefront of getting it out there to the public to show them that this vehicle is really cool. It's for the youth, you know, people that are really active and don't want to drive a minivan.
I think it was surprising to all of us when we heard that this vehicle was in development, because we just assumed that there were these vehicles. It's surprising to me that there has been no SUV until now. Why is that, do you think?
You know, I mean, out of sight, out of mind. You know, a lot of people that don't really know a lot about people with disabilities or aren't, you know, in that world, they think that, oh, okay, well, they don't really need to know a lot, and there's already a lot of stuff out there, but there isn't, and there's not a lot of cool stuff. You know, there might be stuff that, you know, that's good for the older generation, but now with people that are injured, usually like are 15 to 25 years old, and they want to drive around in style with a smooth profile.
Because the choices up until now were what, a mom van, right?
Yeah, basically it was, you know, your soccer mom minivan, and that's all. Get in, and that's all you got. But now with this, it's going to change the market. It's going to change the world, and you'll see a lot of other companies trying to step up their game.
We're going to link to this photograph and some video of this, but for those of our listeners who are trying to picture this in their mind right now, give us a sort of a visual of this vehicle.
Imagine a Ford Explorer, and then you're looking at it like, okay, that's really cool. The back door on the passenger side slides open, and a ramp comes out, and you're like, what? And this thing turns into a nice little transformer for someone who's in a wheelchair, and they roll in. They have options to drive out of their wheelchair. You can sit in your wheelchair in the passenger side because the two seats in the front are removable, so you can either drive out of your chair or transfer into the chair that's already in the car. So there's options, you know, there's a lot of different options for people depending on their disability.
And so that sets it apart even more from just a regular wheelchair accessible minivan, right?
Yeah, exactly. Drive out of your own chair, be in your own chair in the passenger seat, because these things click in, like the either wheelchair can click in with special adaptation, or their chair, like the normal car seat, you can remove. So either that on the driver's side or the passenger. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it's just like a regular SUV, too, and one of the Fords. It's 3.5 yeah. Liter. It's got a V6 on it, so you can move with it, too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it looks like any old able-bodied person car until you open it up, and then it has some surprises for you.
Talk to me a little bit about the foundation that you formed and the work that you do.
Yeah, Life Rolls On. It was started in 2002 when I wanted to give back to the community, and I started it to help other people with disabilities surf again, or maybe surf for the first time, and skateboarding events where people are in their wheelchair and there's, you know, kind of skating at the local parks. And it's great. Like, we have over 100 people that come surfing with us at all of our events, and we do them in California, Florida, New Jersey, Virginia, North Carolina, New York, Nova Scotia. And it's just, it's cool to be able to, you know, have people that may never have thought they could ever surf, especially after their accident, get on the water and just be inspired. And it's beautiful.
How important is that to the mentality of a person, you know, regardless of their disability or their ability, to be able to do things that they love without being hindered?
Yeah, I mean, look, when you get put into a situation like myself, which you're on the verge of being a top professional surfer, and then you break your neck, your whole life changes. Like, what do I do? What can I do? You start to figure those things out. And at the time of my injury, there was nothing like this. So I'm really excited that when people do get injured now, their life's not over. They can do things that they maybe never thought they could. They're meeting new people, creating friendships, relationships, building their self-esteem. And, you know, there's people that have been married at, like, who have met at our events. And it's great. It's beautiful.
We should tell people that you actually had a surfing accident, and that's how you were paralyzed.
Yeah, I mean, I broke my neck surfing when I was 17 years old, a month before turning professional. I was surfing at my local break, and unfortunately I fell and broke my neck at the C6 level and became a quadriplegic, and that's where this all started. That was in 1996.
And how often do you surf? Do you go out every morning still?
No, I only surf a couple times a month. I wait for really good waves. I'm very selective, you know? Every time you surf, it's a danger. So I want to make sure that if something were to happen, it's under a really good wave.
Have you gotten a lot of, has there been a lot of, I know you're here at the auto show, have you gotten a lot of good response to this new Ford vehicle? Or are people stopping and looking at it? And
I mean, for sure. People are going to be asking a lot of questions. They're going to open a lot of eyes and more so open the conversation up of people with disabilities to show them that, hey, you know, these guys can still be cool. You could, you know, do things that they maybe never thought they could. And this is going to bring a lot of independence and freedom, and it's going to be cool because once you open up the car, people will be like, whoa, I didn't even know. And that's really what it's all about, you know. We're all, like, I look at it like people are sometimes judged by their shell, you know, but there's a lot of stuff that goes on inside of people that people don't even know, you know. You could be beautiful on the outside, but have a lot of problems on the inside. So this vehicle is like beautiful on the inside, beautiful on the outside, and it's going to open up a conversation.
And along that lines, along those lines, you know, we part of our conversation here on this show is to talk about the money behind things. Obviously, Ford is looking at this. They're looking and they're seeing there's money to be made here, right? I mean, they wouldn't be doing this without that. And so do you think this is, you mentioned just briefly earlier, this might spark something further. There's a market for this?
There's definitely a market for this. I mean, like I said, the majority of people that get injured or that have a disability are, especially with spinal cord injuries, are between like 15 and 25 years old. And that this is what they've been waiting for. But yeah, I mean, there's a big market.
Jesse Bilauer is a surfer who's in Chicago this week to promote Ford's new Brawnability MXV. It's going to be manufactured in Winnemac, Indiana, which is not too far southeast of Chicago. It'll be available at 200 authorized dealers throughout the United States and on display at the Chicago Auto Show, which starts today. It is now 5:46 on the morning opening bell and the morning traffic now. Here's Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning again. We're keeping a close eye on the markets. Dow futures off 272 points this half hour. The S&P futures off 32. Oil is trading at $26 a barrel. Let's get a look at some of the commodities from yesterday. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. In livestock trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday, live cattle futures closed higher. And part of that came because of the cash cattle price in the U.S. Plains. A few cattle brought $134 per hundredweight. That's $2 lower than last week. Sellers elsewhere held out for $138. So at the end of the trading day yesterday, lean hogs finished mostly lower with the May Lean hog contract, $74.67. The live cattle contract for April ended at $131.80. And the April feeder cattle contract ended the day down $151.35.
All right. Thanks, Ori. And we'll stay tuned to you throughout the morning for the latest on commodities. Also this morning, there's news that a few Olympic athletes are actually considering not going to Brazil to compete in the 2016 Summer Olympics. This is because of the Zika virus. And there are new travel restrictions as well, travel warnings to people all over the globe. Let's bring in Rick Cini of faircompare.com. He's at Rick Cini on Twitter. That's S-E-A-N-E-Y. Rick, good morning. There are some travel restrictions. What should people know?
It's pretty fluid right now, but the State Department has about two dozen tropical-based countries south of the North American border in places like Latin America, Mexico, the Caribbean, and also in South America. You need to be checking on the State Department website. It's changing daily. The bottom line is that if you're a woman or have a family that's about to have a pregnancy or whatnot, you need to talk to your doctor. The airlines are allowing people to get out of this in a similar fashion as they would allow, for example, during snowstorms when they cancel flights or they waive change fees. So you have some opportunity there to change your plans or to have plans later on in the year and not lose the value of your ticket. So it's pretty fluid right now. We even have it at the southern border of the United States as well. So there's not a huge amount of great information about this. It's something that's relatively new, but it's in the news all the time. So be sure and chat with your doctor.
And this is one of those things with travel generally you have to be aware of. Wherever you go, there are health concerns, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't matter where you're heading. There's certain places in the world where you probably wouldn't worry as much if you're going into Western Europe, but if you're going to Eastern Europe or if you're going into Asia, for example, all those things you need to be checking into. There's visa restrictions. There's travel warnings. It's always good to be well-informed when you're traveling.
There's a lot of folks who are really getting nervous about Zika virus and the Olympics with Brazil, but they've seemed to pull off Carnival okay. Is that a bright spot, or is there still...
Well, you know, the interesting thing is we watch literally tens of millions of searches each day on our site at Fair Compare, and we haven't seen a huge drop in price to either South America, including Brazil, or nor to the Caribbean nations yet. So I don't think this is stunted demand like we saw with security issues in Mexico, 4 or 5 years ago. So we'll have to see where this plays out. I think, again, it's really fluid. There's not great information on this. And it's one of those things where you just have to be acutely aware of what's going on, especially as spring break is coming along. A lot of people travel spring break to these destinations, and we haven't seen a big drop in actual prices. That means demand is still pretty strong.
Is it too early to say whether people are changing plans for the Olympics or making plans for the Olympics?
Yeah, it's a little too early. I mean, a lot of you can buy your ticket up to 11 months in advance. There's a lot of charter flights going in to Brazil, into both Sao Paulo and Rio. It's hard to really gauge all those charter flights are coming. Remember, you're talking about entire sets of people from countries, thousands of people coming in just for the entourage of everybody, not only the people that are flying in there as well. So it's hard to tell, but really the pricing hasn't changed much in the last 5 or 6 months. Clearly, you're a little late in the game right now if you're trying to get tickets. They're adding some more capacity in. That's a sign that tells me that the demand hasn't dropped very much.
You're watching this. Did you see the Somalia airliner that had this apparent bomb that blew up, and they were kind of late in getting the word out about this? Is that something that flyers should be aware of and be concerned about? Are they still trying to blow up airplanes?
There's no doubt, right? We've seen what happened over in Egypt recently. We've seen what's happening in North Africa and even in the Horn of Africa there. Certainly, if you go to the State Department travel website, every country, they have exactly what's going on with those particular countries and which airlines are safe and which airlines aren't. So if you're traveling intra-Africa, for example, you definitely need to know where you are. On our site, we monitor those things and make sure we don't actually sell or show those prices on our particular site. So, but you do have to be aware of all those particular locations, especially if you're traveling in to Africa or into some places like India and also in Indonesia and other places like that where there's been some issues.
You saw recently this week, Chicago announced they're adding gate capacity at O'Hare. How is that going to affect air travel across the country?
It's not going to do. It's not going to affect air travel too much. That you know, they did at O'Hare add a runway in the last couple of years as well. So they're definitely gearing up for capacity increase. The problem is you have four airlines that are controlling 80% of traffic in the United States, and they're not want to add a bunch of new flights. So then the question is, are we going to get some new airlines that'll suck in some of that capacity? Are we going to allow foreign investment and have more foreign airlines flying? At the moment, that's been put on hold and stuck in a variety of political issues around that. So, you know, just because you have more gates, we have the same problem. I live in the Dallas area. DFW has lots of gates, but we just don't have the airlines that want those gates.
Yeah, so maybe the cheap fares will follow. Speaking of cheap fares, you got anything good for us?
Oh, sure. I mean, look, I was just looking in the first week in March at a variety of places. You know, the starting to warm up, for example, in the Northwest, you have Seattle and Portland under 260 round trip. Even Vancouver, which is new, normally $500, is at $350 round trip, which is a pretty good deal. If you're heading to South Florida, you've got Miami, Orlando, all under $200 round trip for the first couple weeks in March. You also have Southern California, Los Angeles, San Diego, under $200. I was looking at almost every city in the country this morning with radio shows. Chicago is probably one of the two cheapest places to fly out of right now.
Rick Cini, the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. You can find him on Twitter at Rick Cini, S-E-A-N-E-Y. Rick, thanks for being on The Opening Bell.
Hey, great. Thank you.
And that's the program for today. We want to thank our producer, Mary Sandberg, our engineer, Ben Cortez, production help from Ross Cochran and Kevin Powell. Have a great day. The Steve Cochran Show is next.